This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
Hey there, pod people. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Through the Abyss podcast. I'm your co-host, Mandy.
And I am your co-host, Ben.
And we've got a special co-host on with us today, Miss Leslie. How are you today?
Hi, everybody. I'm good. You didn't ask me to say hi, but I'm saying hi.
Yeah, say hi. Do your thing.
That's totally fine. I'm sure our listeners would, you know, like a hello to be acknowledged.
Otherwise, it'd be straight up rude, so we're good.
And I said hello to everybody. I wasn't selective.
Well, we appreciate that, and I'm sure they do as well.
Yeah, as always, my hello is like skipping several people, and they know who they are. But other than them, everyone.
Oh, my God. So we have Leslie on today because we're doing a story on Gary Gamfer. And there is hardly any information on this guy out there. So I brought Leslie in because she actually went to school with him. So hopefully she can give us a little bit of insight. All right. So Gary Gamfer, I don't know his full birthday. I know he was born in 76. So basically what happened when he was 17 in 1993, he was convicted of stabbing this 8-year-old girl.
Wow.
Named Jessica. They were basically, a bunch of them were out playing hide and seek in the apartment complex that Jessica lived in. And for some reason, Gary and Jessica were paired together. So while they were supposed to be seeking, they ended up disappearing. And then, of course, Jessica went missing and they picked Gary up later. But the gist of it was he stabbed her for absolutely no reason. Nobody knows why. The news articles I found, which were like two, which is crazy because this is what happened in Highland Heights, Kentucky, which is the same place where Shayna Hubers killed her boyfriend. And
that was everywhere.
That shit was everywhere. But, you know, this 17-year-old kid stabs an 8-year-old little girl, and there's nothing. There are no interviews with him. There's no any kind of psychological diagnoses. I mean, some of the reports say that he was mildly retarded, which we'll have Leslie comment on here in a little bit. But there's absolutely nothing about this guy, about what happened. I don't even know, you know, as morbid as it sounds, I don't even know where she was stabbed.
I mean, maybe, I don't know. Like, do you think there could have been some sort of cover up? Like, he's related to somebody. Somebody's got the ability to hush this, or do you think it just didn't make the news?
Other stuff. I don't know, Leslie. I mean, this is your neck of the woods. What do you think?
I don't think there was like a connection. You know, like Alexandria, Kentucky is not some big, you know, like crime center, mafia boss type area. I think it probably was more secretive because of the age of the victim and the age of the perpetrator, yes, you know? And yeah. And then if you're also, if his defense is going based on the reports of his lower cognition, you know, they're probably wanting to keep him away from interviews so that he doesn't say something that's incriminating, especially if he doesn't have the IQ. Know how to talk to adults. He was very awkward, so it would have been, as if I were his parent or something, I would have thought it would have been in his best interest not to communicate with anybody, just based on awkwardness.
Well, I know he lived with his grandparents, so don't know where his parents are in all of this, but I mean, you had classes with him, right?
Yeah, we were in just one. Even though we were the same age, born the same year, he was, I thought he was a freshman when all this happened. So I was surprised when I was reviewing the notes that he was a sophomore. But we had band class together. We sat next to each other in the same section of band.
But he was in the general population. Nobody in school thought he had any sort of handicaps.
Not to my acknowledgement. Now, he was in a group that was a lot of, they were more outcast and they weren't, but he was definitely in Jen's population. You know, he had glasses. I would think that his IQ was normal enough, you know, back in the 80s and 90s when we were going to school, that he would have just been an awkward student. But I don't know if he was really identified as a low student. He wasn't in the classrooms with the low cognition kids, you know.
So did he actually have friends though, and everything?
What was that?
Did he have friends and everything?
Yeah, he did have a group of friends, and like I said, they were all probably more on the marginalized group in mm-hmm. school. So like some of his peer group, you know, they stood out because of the way they dressed. You know, back in 19 before Columbine happened, mm-hmm. you know, he had friends, had the long black trench coats, the
goth kids,
really
bat boots, kind of like a very Columbine. We would describe it now as Columbine because we have that reference point, but back then I think they
like the trench coat mafia guys back then,
you know. But they were, you know, I think they kind of played into their own isolation group of, yeah, we're not the cool kids, but we will make ourselves cool, you know?
So they were kind of like Dylan Klebold then. Like, I mean, did you study the two boys from Columbine?
I've read about them. I've watched, you know, different documentaries. Yeah. They were definitely, the group he was in was definitely not amongst the, even, you know how like in high school, you've got like the very popular people, the cheerleaders, the sports, the, mm-hmm. Well, and then you've got like where the majority of everybody, they go to school, they kind of float in and out of different groups based on, you know, what activities are in, what classes are in. And mm-hmm. then you've got the very, that seem to be outcast everywhere they go, but sometimes within those outcast groups there's small communities within those outcasts, there's small yeah. groups. He had a small group where, you know, I can bring to mind like four or five different people that I remember him being mm-hmm. around.
Did you have any interaction with him?
After
go ahead.
And after the murder, of course, there, you know, there's a lot of high school talk. People, you sure. know, saying, oh, well, he would talk about this or he would do this. And I don't know how factual those comments are, you know, after the fact when people are trying to make connections.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I had one class with him. We did band. He didn't do marching band. So it was just the concert band
mm-hmm.
Where you sit every day at school, and he sat right next to me and, you know, just wasn't very engaging. And, you know, it's not, you know, like I'm a friendly person, so I may say hi, but he wouldn't necessarily say hello back, you know?
Yeah. Let me just clarify that. Leslie's the kind of person who will say hi and go into a 45-minute tangent right after that, even if the person's not listening. Yeah. So yeah, she's... And he would never engage back with you?
No, he was just minimally social, you know?
Yeah. And you had spoken prior to us recording about thinking he might have some sort of form of autism spectrum in the Asperger's kind of range. And that would actually make a lot of sense because your cognitive abilities would be pretty sound. I mean, people with Asperger's can go to college. They can have great jobs. You can be like an Elon Musk, right? But you're just socially awkward. You don't want to engage with people. You have trouble making emotional connections. So that would make a lot of sense.
That's if he had, if it was easier for him to connect with people younger than him, you know,
yeah, because... I was wondering that too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're not related to the person, my first thought is why is a high school sophomore playing hide and go seek?
Well, he hung out with the younger kids. So, yeah, that seemed to be more his crowd. So
right.
I guess,
and I mean, maybe back then we weren't looking for stuff, but like now, if that happened, I think people would be like, what's going on with this?
Well, now, right? Yeah. But I mean, I think, and I've read in some of the reports that the parents, because he seemed they describe him as seeming very childish and very kind of slow. So they didn't think anything about him wanting to play with the younger kids. It's like,
yeah, it made sense, more like they're, because even though he didn't have any sort of like scholastic reason for people to think there was something, people knew he was not on the level of a teenager.
Right.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Right. But also back then, like, we didn't have separate buses, you know, so elementary kids were riding the same buses as high schoolers, where
Now. Really?
Well, the school district I work with, like, they don't have mixed grades. Like, elementary has a bus route, and then middle school have a bus route. It's not typical. They have different buses that come through at different times for different groupings of kids. They did in my school, and I'm pretty sure they do for the district I work in.
I mean, that would make sense. I mean, if I had a child, I wouldn't want them riding with high school kids. I mean, people, like, I remember being in high school. Kids are bad, right? They bully each other. They're definitely going to bully the younger kids. You don't want your, like, 8-year-old in a bus with a 17-year-old who just got done smoking pot before he stepped on the bus, right? Like, no.
So judgmental, Ben. My goodness.
Well, and I mean, you certainly don't want the 17-year-old sitting on the bus with an 8-year-old that just smoked pot either.
fair.
Yeah, in this day and age, these younger kids are just as bad.
And we're getting, like, to the point where pot's not even a good example because it's legal now.
Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, so.
I mean, all right. So, like,
it's lettuce when we were in school.
Right. But yeah, maybe if more kids took a hit of acid and better. Stepped on the bus, stay away from my child.
Leslie is also an occupational therapist, and she works with special needs children on a daily basis. So she has, which is one of the reasons why I wanted her on here, because she's got kind of firsthand insight into things of this nature. So he wasn't engaging. And I mean, does it surprise you to find out that he preferred to hang out with, you know, the younger crowd?
Not, I mean, I can't diagnose him. I don't know if he has a diagnosis. It wouldn't be surprising if he was somewhere on the autism spectrum, or mm-hmm. if he did have, you know, like behavioral or developmental delays, you know, mm-hmm. that he would. But if you're also, if that's your community, you know, he was in an apartment complex. Mm-hmm. And if that was the community for his social outlet, I don't know if I, as a 17-year-old, would want to be playing with younger kids unless I was like babying them and it was part of like my babysitting job.
Right.
I don't know if I'd be like, oh, you know, who's really cool to hang out with, you know, I don't know if I would, but if that is your only opportunity for socialization and you ride the bus with them, so you kind of see them in a different aspect, you know, if you're bored and you've got nothing to do and this was typical, I don't know if I would think it was that odd in that time. I do think, you know, with 2020 eyes, yeah. I would definitely be like, no, I would, I don't think I would let my younger kids hang out with an older kid, you know, but unsupervised.
I think your assessment there is fair. Cause now that I think about it, you know, like back in the day in the neighborhood, right. There was always like a little brother, little sisters hanging around when you're playing stuff with your friends. Mm-hmm. You just kind of forget they're there. Yeah. I guess I just thought it was weird that he was partnered with the 8-year-old, but maybe they partnered the little kids in this community game of hide and go seek with the older kids just so that, because they're young, you know, when I'm getting lost or, you know, like,
right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could make sense.
And I think, I could be wrong, but if I remember right, like that apartment area, I think kind of had some like lower marshier type areas. So, you know, I would be worried about, you know, twisting an ankle or a kid getting hurt or something yeah. like that. That's stuff that I would worry about now. I don't know if I would have thought about that as a kid, you know?
No, we didn't care about crap like that. The marshier, the weirder places were, the more fun they were to play in. Or the places where my dad said you're not allowed to go, that's the first place I went.
I literally remember playing, we used to play guns. Sorry, it's a violent, horrible thing now. I'm sure it shouldn't happen, but toy guns, right? It. Like, and like, so we all would have like two teams and you're on this team. And like, anyways, I remember running to get away from somebody. I like was barefoot because we did whatever back then. Yeah. I cut my foot with glass, but I continued running until I found a place to be to hide. And then I looked at my foot. I didn't even stop to see the damage because that's what you did back then.
Were you found really easy because you left a trail of blood?
Probably. My footprint all the way there.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Can't be Ben's partner. He bleeds.
That guy bleeds everywhere. Don't be partners with him.
Oh God. And you know, kids would say that too. That's the sad thing is that we're laughing about it, but you know, some stupid ass kid would make that remark. He leaves trails.
Now it's just trails of tears.
Oh God. Aren't we just the crew this morning? Yeah, it's the first thing when Ben came on this morning. He's like, yeah, I watched a movie last night. I shouldn't have because it made
No, it was this morning. Literally 6 a.m. Oh, yeah, I was 15 minutes into a Netflix Christmas special or movie and like the tears are coming. It just got a little too sad right off the jump.
Is it the new one with Ryan Gosling?
No, it's the new one with Freddie Prinze Jr. It's called like No Christmas Without You. I think it's just called Without You.
Oh, gosh.
I don't like Christmas movies. They're just ridiculous, except for A Christmas Story, which I can't wait for part two to come out.
I mean, it's Ralph the same as all the other Hallmark type love stories. It's just this one's during Christmas time.
But yeah, same exact story plot line, just different.
They
actors.
All get me. I just was surprised that it got me 15 minutes in.
I'm not because I cry at commercials. So
I don't cry. I'm emotionless.
Whatever. You just hold things in.
Deal.
Oh, actually, you know what? I don't think I've ever seen you cry in the 20 plus years I've known you.
That's because my tear ducts are broken.
There's a point where you're just out of them. The tears are gone.
Oh, I wish mine would dry up.
All right, this is getting depressing. Let's continue.
Okay, yeah. I don't even remember where we were. We were talking.
We're done
yeah,
with the neighborhood and the game.
There was actually, you know, because you were talking about guns. Yeah. There should have been some red flags for the parents of these kids who were playing with this guy because apparently he loved weapons. So he liked to show his knives and he actually brought a gun and showed this little girl his gun. And the little girl, of course, went back and told her mom. And then I guess her mom confronted Gary and he was like, it was a small gun. No, it's not the same girl. Okay. It's a different girl. He's like, it was a small gun. And then nothing happened. Everybody just kept letting him play with their kids. Like, okay, well, it was a small gun. So it was okay. You know,
I think you also have to take into context the time and the place. Like there's a lot of, first off, like
you're in Kentucky,
Alexandria, in Northern Kentucky is very, very right wing, you know?
Yeah. And I'm pro gun too, by the way, but.
Right. And there's a lot of people that hunt. So I think, you know, the fact that it was a handgun would have probably given me more pause as an adult, like, well, you can't play with someone who's got that, whether it's empty or not. It's just, it's not a toy. It's not a plaything.
Yeah.
But I also think that a lot of, you know, we didn't see a lot of gun violence in, I think there probably just wasn't as much of a concern, you know, like, I think people just was like, oh, everybody's got a gun. Everybody's got access to a gun.
Yeah. And I get that. And I mean, you know, like you said, really not until Columbine did the school shootings really become a thing because I mean, I grew up in Tennessee and I had access to guns all the time, but I don't know. I guess we were just raised differently where, you know, you don't touch a gun unless you have specific permission to do so. You have an adult with you. But the thing that bothers me is that
he's showing it to a child.
A 17-year-old should not be showing these little kids a gun. He should not be carrying a gun around little kids. you know, and especially right. in the parents. I mean, if that had been my kid, I would have whooped that Gary boy's ass. He's showing a gun to my little girl. That's just me. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I would too, but I'm also not, I don't want to own or hold a gun. So I have a different reaction to guns in general, you know? I think, what's more concerning is, you know, when he talks about, you know, the different knives that he would pocket knives or mm-hmm. honey knives that carried, and the articles made it seem like these are things that he brought to school as well, that he yeah. had on his persons often. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I was thinking back and I was like, man, we didn't have security checks. We, mm-hmm. I don't even think we had an assembly about bullying or safety in no. the school, or report if you see this, report if you hear that. So that was really surprising. It was surprising to read it in the newspaper, but it wasn't surprising when I consider what the report after his arrest, you know, because there were rumors after his arrest that you know, within his small group that he would talk often about, you know, this curiosity of what it would be like to kill somebody. Seriously? You know? Yes. I mean, I don't know if it's fact. I've never heard him say it. So I can't say that. Yes, he had those conversations, mm-hmm. but it was definitely talked a lot about after his arrest, and when the police were, or not police, it's probably news people coming to the school and wanting to interview people that knew him,
yeah,
and stuff like that. And that brought up quite a bit. It was brought up fairly consistently to where it's like it blurs the line between reality and fiction, you know. But
people just wanted their little 15 minutes.
Yeah,
of fame.
But I mean, it's almost believable though that it's reality, because like you said, it's kind of hard to believe that the paper would say he's carrying all these knives, because if he's being interrogated by the police, he didn't say, oh yes, every day I took many knives to school, right? That's coming from his peers, but no one's reporting that. Right. So it's just like a different world. If he's really saying he like has fantasies about killing people, but even without that, if just like so many people know he's carrying multiple knives to school, but no one's reporting him, like it's insanity.
I don't know. I mean, if that were me back then, I would have been a freshman because you're a year older than me, but.
Well, no, I was a junior. Oh, so you'd okay, have so been a sophomore.
I would have been. Okay. Yeah. 93. I would have been a sophomore. I don't know. If somebody was who I knew who carried knives on a daily basis, which I mean, I can't say anything because I think I probably carried a pocket knife to school.
Yeah, but pocket knife, I don't count. Like, but if this dude's got multiple, like, different butterfly knives.
Well, hunting knives. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah. But I mean, I think if I knew this about this person and they had admitted to having fantasies about what it would be like to stab a person, I don't know that I would keep that to myself.
That's what I'm saying.
I think I would at least tell my parents.
Right. Right. I can say like this is sort of similar situation. I probably shouldn't say this because that guy's out there somewhere. He's going to hear this podcast and he's going to come find me. So like in grade school, true story, kid brought a gun to school and he showed me.
Oh, shit.
And I did tell on him and they took him out. He got expelled. I never saw him again. But on his way out, the teacher walked him past my desk. He turned and he said, I'm going to kill you. And I never saw him again. And so.
Yeah. But I mean, Ben, how many times do I say I'm going to kill you? Every time we talk, so, you know, of course, this guy didn't have.
But even at that age, I was like, "This isn't right. I have to tell on this kid."
Yeah.
Right? In the situation with Gary, I think who he would have confided these curiosities, because I remember it being posted or not posted, because we didn't post shit back then. Sorry, yeah. Can we cuss?
Yes,
yes, we can cuss.
In fact, cuss more.
Totally fucking fine. You're good.
you know, but, you know, when they always posed it like it was the curiosity. He was curious about what it would be like to watch someone's life as they're expiring, leave their body, what it would be like to be the perpetrator of the murder of another person. But, you know, like there's, I mean, I went to high school with the world's oldest Boy Scout. You know, people had knives on them. And we didn't think, well, that's just nicknames we gave people, you know, because, okay, you know, most people, most people are not Boy Scouts, you know, by the time they hit middle school.
You got to explain this stuff, Leslie.
She's talking about the Eagle Scouts. We all know at least one of them, yeah, where it's like, yeah, wait, yeah, we're in high school and you're still in the Scouts? Oh.
Yeah, you're still in the Scouting. It's, you know, you know, so when you come across someone who's 18 and they're still in the Boy Scouts, you're like, you must be the world's Boy Scout, you know. But you know, that was the community back there. And I don't think you know, it's people who hunted with their dads, and I don't think anyone would have thought too much about carrying knives. And I think if I had overheard that conversation, I probably would have thought, man, that's one strange little, you know, I'm not going to cuss, but
whatever.
that's strange.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
weird. I talk about it amongst my peers, but I don't know if I would think about going to an authority with the intent of, hey, this is concerning. I think I probably would have mentioned it to the teachers that I thought was cool. Like, oh my gosh, did you hear this? This is crazy. Without even thinking of getting that person in trouble, I think I just would have thought, that's weird.
Okay, so Leslie's the gossiper and I'm the one trying to save lives. Let's just put that out there right now.
Yeah. Okay. And I think you're right, Leslie. Like as a high school kid, you would probably just think that was bizarre. As an adult now, I would find that even more concerning than if someone's like, man, I'm going to kill you, right? Like, because that's very, very so intricately to the point of I would be interested to know how it feels the exact moment when the life leaves a body. That's serial killer talk. That's not like, right? So
yeah, but
as a teenager,
I mean,
you'd be like, that's just weird.
Do you think that, you know, because if somebody said that to me now, I'd call the cops probably, or, you know, take my gun out and point out and be like, give me your knife right now. But I mean, do you think that's just because we're so, well, number one, you know,
we've evolved a lot since then.
Well, not only that, you're getting a PhD in psychology. Leslie's occupational therapist. I took psychology classes too, and we all love true crime. So do you think that's just where our mind automatically goes, or because
that there are grown adults today that would hear someone say that and they would be like, that's just weird, right? But I think that my only point is that sort of talk is actually more disturbing than other things that people would report. To me, that's like huge red flag.
Well, yeah, as it should have been back then too, but.
But they're kids and they don't know that that's a huge red flag. And they were probably the kids that, like Leslie said, were part of his immediate group of friends. And so they're all a little bit weird and they're just like, yeah, whatever.
Or maybe they thought they just knew him so well that they were just like, he's full of shit. He's not going to fucking do anything.
He just says stuff. Yeah. I mean, because until this point, we don't know of him doing anything, right? This is his one thing. So they've got no reason to think he's dangerous.
And if that's your group and your whole like niche as your group is being outcast, being on the fringe of society, and you know, and so like how much more fringe can you get than to talk about like really morbid stuff like that? You know, it doesn't mean that, like, I would think if I were a part of that friend group, I would think, oh, this is just talk. You know, this is just fantasy thinking. This is fantasy talk. This is, you know, how to the outside of society can you get without crossing that line? I think now we've had so many different experiences where we see that children do not have the ability to stop fantasy within their own mind. And so they continue to live in that fantasy world, at some point that fantasy world, it spills over into their reality.
Blurs,
we have more grasp of that now than I think we did
30 years ago.
Right. You know? Even like a Columbine situation probably started off with just two kids playing fantasy.
And well, it did.
Right.
Well, it absolutely did.
Had so many kids that their parents and so many kids that, you know, have instigated through as so media has become so much more of an aspect of your daily life. I mean, we're seeing that kids really have an inability to stop that fantasy thought without someone else from saying that is triggering, you know?
Yeah.
Well, Leslie, with you, you work with kids. Have you ever, and obviously I know you can't give names, obviously, but have you come across anyone who's made you think, God, I hope they don't have access to a gun? I mean, what would you do in a situation like that if you were concerned along those lines?
I think it would depend on, like, I've had some concerns where, you know, there's different kids and it's like when you consider their, when you consider their imbalances and you consider their home life and you consider opportunities that they're going to have available to them, you just kind of, you can kind of project this doomsday type future for them. And it's concerning because, oh gosh, I hope in 10, 15 years, I don't hear about this kid's name. But if I do, I can't say that I would be that surprised that their behaviors escalated in a way that turned violent. But I think, you know, if there was a sure threat, if I was hearing other kids talk and it sounded very real in their intent, I mean, by law, I'm legally required to report. But I think I would also, like, that would be when I would go to the principal of the school and say, you need to be aware of what's being heard so that the school psychologist can get involved, the principal can get involved, adults can interview these kids and find out, you know, is this, you know, just exaggerated talk amongst kids or is this a student that's really in crisis, you know, and can we interject before the student has severe actions? You know,
so but, I mean that, but that's if they're talking about a possible threat. But I mean, the ones that you just have that weird feeling, do you ever, can you go to the parents and be like, might be a good idea to put this kid in therapy because I see a Columbine situation in his future, his or her future?
You know, I think I would be more concerned about job security and what could happen legally by bringing up those fears. A lot of times the kids that are troubling do not have a home life that is supportive. You know, I think it makes, I would think not having a relationship with the parents necessarily. And, you know, and I only have access to students that are on my caseload too. So if this is a kid that's not on my caseload, I really have no reason to be interacting with the principal and the school psychologist where they do have access to the family. They do have an ability to actually probe more. But most of what I do is in elementary school too. And I think it would be different if I was more in a high school community, you know? So I don't know. I think it's weird. There's definitely some kids where I'm like, I hope I don't see their name in the papers in 10 years.
You know? You know what, that to me, that's so terrifying because like you said, with your mandatory reporting status, you're almost better off if the person seems to have an immediate threat now because it can be intervened and taken care of. But in a situation where you just have a feeling, there's really nothing you can do.
Right. Like,
that's terrifying.
So kid seems odd and creepy doesn't mean that they're diabolical.
Right.
Right. I'd still keep my eye on them.
You know, what's giving you those weird feelings? Is it something that the kid is physically doing? Is it something that they're saying? Is it the way that their peers interact with them? You know, there's a lot of different tip-offs to behavior. And then you also have to make sure that you're checking your own prejudice at the door, you know, like what's internal with myself that's making me have those projected ideas on that kid, you know? Right.
Yeah, the implicit biases. And I'm sure that of his friend group that you said they were all a little bit outside the fringe, there were probably a couple members of them where you're like, they were totally normal people. I mean, they were outside the fringe, but they were people that you felt comfortable with. They weren't, you know what I'm saying? Like, even a group of people that from a glance are the same, he was awkward. Some of them weren't.
Right. Well, and I did know some of them a lot more on a lot more personal level, some of the friends within his friend group. And different as they weren't concerning. And they definitely had aspects to their person that was, you know, that was likable, that was enjoyable, right. That was like, you get beneath the surface of what they're presenting, you know, really chill people, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah. So my point of that is it's that inner feeling you were talking about, it does mean something, right? You can't necessarily act upon it, but it does mean something.
Now, Leslie, after he was arrested, did you have any conversations with any of his friends about what had happened? Or who did you talk to anybody about it?
Well, I did one of the people pretty regularly that was within his friend group, because we had other areas of connections, mm-hmm. you know, and they were all very shocked. Like, the consensus among his friend group was that they were shocked that his behaviors were violent. They were shocked that he committed murder. So, and I don't know if that's because the rumors were false, you know, like he didn't talk about these curiosities and these fantasies, or if it's because, you know, you just didn't think that people could do that, or that a kid mm-hmm. could do that, you know? I don't recall where the shock came from. I don't know if I was even that good at conversating with people about weird things to even ask the right questions to find out the basis of the shock, you know, mm-hmm. but I know it was unexpected. I know it was unexpected in his friend group. It was surprising. And to this day, he still gets some support from people he interacted with a lot as a kid, you know, that people that were his friends, you know.
This case is really aggravating because there's just nothing out there. And it's just, I want to know how this guy goes from playing an innocent game of hide and seek to, here, let me take this poor little girl to this baseball field and stab her to death. I don't understand that.
Yeah. It almost seems he would have had to have had that plan when he entered the game. I mean, obviously I don't know that. The only reason I say that is because you think that people would be like, he seems like not with it today. He shouldn't play our game, right? But they just,
well,
the unless the plan was always there and it was just the opportunity was right.
Well, that's true.
I mean, if he did have those fantasies and he always walked around kind of prepared, he mm-hmm. may have seen an opportunity that presented itself, that, and he was impulsive on that opportunity.
And if he's always carrying knives, he's always prepared.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because in the article that I read about when they found her body, you know, they couldn't tell anything of how she was killed. Like her outer clothes apparently didn't have blood on them or anything like that. So, I mean, it sounds like he would have had to have taken her coat off and stabbed her and then put it back on. For there not to be any blood on the outside. That's what I don't understand. Unless
you're talking about the outside of her entire outfit, like the cut was only under the, like, the shirt.
From what I read, that's what it sounded like. Yeah. But I mean, there was no apparent sexual
sign. Well,
and
they did make a point, and they made it a point to say that she wasn't, that there wasn't any type of sexual deviancy or crime done mm-hmm. against her.
Right.
But that doesn't mean to say that she wasn't undressed at some point.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, for there not to be any blood on the outside, he would have had to take him.
Right. That's what, like, even you said that they deemed that it wasn't something sexual. It almost seemed like an assault, but then she was struggling, so he stabbed her. But like, he might have pulled her, like closed her shirt up and then stabbed. But I mean, they can say,
well,
they don't,
I mean, if he did anything, he didn't leave any evidence.
Well, you're right. And well, and he might not have completed it. I mean, it might have been like, this is what he was going to do. Then it wasn't working out, so he just killed her instead.
Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility, but there's just, I don't think he's ever been publicly interviewed ever, because I literally cannot find anything on this guy whatsoever.
I mean, because have you
aside
ever
heard from of going and knocking on his door?
But have you ever heard of a case where someone's was stabbed underneath their clothes?
No, that's what kills me about this case.
Like, you had to have taken the clothes off or pulled them up, or
maybe it's just really bad reporting.
Yeah. You know, well, I mean, that could be it too. You know, them making speculation,
think,
trying to
like,
make a bigger story out
most
of it.
Right. I think what's most, the biggest discrepancy is that if she had nothing on her, but yet it was reported that he came home bloody. So how did he come home bloody? And as a grandparent, or as a parent in general, adult in general, if a kid came up to me, regardless of age, and they had blood all over them, like, I'd be stripping my own child down to find out where they were hurt. I would assume that they were hurt and that they were bleeding. And it, like, that would have been addressed so much faster than even a child being notified as missing, you know, because he had to have come home within before the child was reported missing, all bloody. So that would definitely bring up, you know, a lot of concerns. But, you know, I would be more interested in seeing what the transcripts of his trial was, if he even went to trial, because if he just admitted guilt and there would have been no trial, there would have been no need for an explanation. There would have been no need for like a timeline, a chronology of events, of what happened first. And then this happened, if he just pled guilty.
Well,
yeah.
And that's, if he just, I mean, pled guilty, there's nothing in there.
Well,
on
that's
it.
What I say too. Like, if he just pled guilty, that gives more credence to why there's no information on any of this as well. Right.
Yeah.
It was just closed quick.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's so many holes in this.
Isn't going to have to put together the story.
Right, but I mean, who turned him in to begin with? I mean, everybody's like, oh, well, Jessica was playing with Gary, so obviously he's going to be suspect number one. And then apparently the cops, when they found him, he was very agitated and they had to calm him down and all this other stuff. But I mean, who's the one who said that he had blood all over him to begin with? Was his grandparents? Did his grandparents turn him in? You know, that,
well,
there's,
I think,
so
that's
many
the,
just questions.
The article
I have
reported was his grandparents said that he came home bloody. I think that's what the article stated. You know,
I don't know. I just, because I mean, you can't, it's very hard to get transcripts from trials because you have to go by the court reporters. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who give them to you. And I found one piece of information on the court case, and it was just about documents that he may or may not have wanted to obtain during his, you know, court process. But there's just nothing on this, and there's just a lot of holes. Like, I mean, I don't, and the ball field that they found him in, this is what I don't understand, because they said they claimed to have dogs and stuff when they were out, and then the couple who I guess found her said that they were literally like 20 feet away from her the night before. How do you not fucking see a little girl's dead body when you're 20 feet away with dogs? I don't get that.
Yeah, you think the dogs would go crazy?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how in a ball field, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
like,
even
I
with lights off, like, you'd see a lump, you know, because it's flat surface. I
well,
just,
you think that the dogs would be dragging you to it. I mean,
right.
My dog smells a mole in someone's yard, and she's dragging me to the mole, you know?
Exactly. Right. And these are supposed to be dogs that were trained with her scent. So how in the hell did they not pick it up from 20 feet away? There's so much that it just, you know, I don't know. My true crime warped mind just wants to turn into some kind of weird conspiracy.
I mean, mine too, because I wanted to say it, but I'm trying to hold it in my head because it's just fantasy. I'm in the young kids' fantasies right now, because I'm like, if he does have cognitive impairments, and like, if he's playing hide and seek, like, you, when you're both the seekers, like, you wouldn't necessarily be right on each. I mean, and did he really do it?
Okay, this is how bad my mind is.
Or did he just say he did it because he's cognitively impaired?
Well, from if I read this correctly, and I make because my memory is horrible, but I thought I had read in one article where there was an adult playing with them as well. So this is where my mind went. He paired Jessica off with Gary. They went missing. And then the adult's the one who actually killed Jessica and blamed it on
and
Gary.
And he paired them off on purpose because he knew that Gary was easy to pin it on. I mean, this is a deep rabbit hole we just fell in, but but I mean, it's hard not to think that kind of stuff when there's just so many holes because there's not so much tied together on this. So.
Yeah. And I mean,
yeah, I'm jumping down that rabbit hole. I don't remember reading that there was another adult or another even older teenager that was playing with them.
It wasn't anything it I sent like you. It was something I couldn't find again. I only read it once.
Okay.
But I thought it was a parent of one of the kids.
The adult
I could be wrong.
Aware that he was playing with the young kids, though.
Right.
It seemed in all the articles that it was par for the course. It wasn't uncommon for him to be hanging out with kids much younger than him.
Therefore, it would be easy for another adult to do it.
Yeah. Well, and then if you look at like the stuff we know that makes it look like it's him, right? You got like he may or may not have talked about wanting someone to die or wanting to see someone die. Like, we're pretty sure he had all these knives all the time, but there's no like he definitely had knives. He definitely said he wanted people. You know what I mean? It's like other than the fact that he's got blood on him, it's like what's the evidence?
And that's only hearsay too. There's nothing there's no police reports that I've been able to find. There's no interrogation videos at all. I mean, there's just
but
for murder in a gossipy area, there's just nothing. What?
If the grandparents, found them bloody.
Right. They're not going
And then a couple of hours after finding their grandchild covered in blood or with blood on them, a neighborhood child he's known to play with goes missing and they're interrogating him. And then they hire a lawyer and there is do not talk. I can see why he's never said anything. If he's got adults around him trying to protect him in the best way that they can protect him. In the only way that they know that they can protect him, which is
silence,
put out as little information as possible so we can minimize your punishment.
Yeah, but I mean, they didn't. I mean, because he was convicted of killing her and he was sentenced to 40 years in prison. So he had to have pled guilty because, I mean, there's nothing as far as a trial goes.
Yeah, and if he pled
guilty, you know, there's
guilty,
no eyewitnesses, there's nothing. You don't get a 40-year conviction. Number one, without a jury, or number two, without pleading guilty, you know, because I mean,
well,
first degree murder, that is 40 years.
I'm not saying he didn't plead guilty. I think that is what happened, which is why we don't have a chronological stamp of events that happened because there was no need to prosecute. There was no need to build that case against him if he's pled guilty. Mm-hmm. But I can see if the grandparents have this information before the child is even reported as missing, mm-hmm. and they are aware of what the legal process could be mm-hmm. and how much harder it would be. Their goal may have been just keeping him out of actual prison and maybe getting him put into a facility for people with disabilities, you know? Well, so it's like, don't talk. Let's get a lawyer. Don't say anything. We're going to plead guilty and we're going to play the system to the way that benefits you the best. And they've been working for a long time. His family have been working for a long time to get him out on parole for years, you know, before he was eventually paroled 25 years into his sentence.
Almost 25 is 24 and some change.
And that makes sense because for the papers to report him having cognitive impairments, right? And if he's in regular classes in school, that stuff probably didn't exist. So they probably immediately pled guilty and then got experts to give him the assessments to determine that impairment.
Oh, they would have had to because, I mean, he couldn't have been held if he, you know, you still have to be legally competent to be able to plead guilty, I believe. And to be sentenced to prison. Because, I mean, if there's some kind of mental disability that you know, impaired his rational thoughts at the time of the crime, he could have went to a mental hospital for those years, but he didn't.
Well, but maybe not necessarily. I mean, look at what we know with the West Memphis 3 murders, or even like the Making a Murderer documentary on Netflix, which both happened in the same timeline back in the 90s.
Right.
You know, the court system didn't look at your cognitive awareness for sentencing and for trial. I mean, in both of those cases, there are defendants that were put on trial that were of lower IQ, that were very easily manipulated by the court system for the court's agenda.
Now, there's a difference between low IQ and being able to be manipulated, as opposed to like a mental diagnosis that would affect the outcome. Because I mean, if he did have some kind of mental disability, I would assume the grandparents would come out and be like, look, you can't convict him because he had no idea what he was doing. So he would have had to been assessed by some kind of psychologist or something to, you know, prove his legal competence to, you know, be sentenced like that. I'm assuming.
Yeah. And I just think that back in the 90s, that wasn't.
Yeah, that might not have been.
And we have proof with other cases that was not happening, that they were manipulating people with lower IQs or with mental health problems for their own purpose.
Our justice system, even today, still sucks.
Right. And if this was a clean and cut case, and it's not going to take time for the prosecutors, it's not going to take a lot of money for the county, because you've got somebody and you've got parents that are aware that maybe he was involved, and their only aspect is minimizing his punishment. Mm-hmm. You know, I can just see where a lot of steps can be skipped over.
Right. Right.
That, well, I guess it just depends on how he, how what, Ben?
I was just going to say, that's why I said they probably did do that quick cognitive assessment to be able to say that he was of a lower mental capability, though, not to get him off or anything like that, but just to, like you said, minimize the damages, be like, we're going to give you a reason why this person did this, right? Which is that he's not fully aware, like a normal 17-year-old. What? How old are you as a sophomore? 16? 16-year-old would be?
16, 17 range. Yeah. He was 17.
That's, you know, well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think he did have had to have pled guilty to this, because there's just, like I said, there's nothing, because apparently I don't even think it went to trial, because
info if there was a trial. He had to have pled guilty, which I think is like you said, he actually had the right type of family, because there's so, I mean, you look at like with the Petitos, right, covering up for their, not them, but the, who's, what's the son?
Brian.
Landry.
They're doing everything they can to make it worse. And now their poor son killed himself. I always say poor son, Mandy gets on me. I get that he killed someone, but he also took his life. Asshole. It's still tragic all around. But my point is, thank God this person's grandparents were like, he's covered in blood. We know he did something. Take him to the police. Convince him just to plead guilty. We're going to try our best to limit the damages on this.
I bet you his lawyer got him some kind of a deal, because I'm pretty sure he was not convicted of first degree murder, because I think he would still be in prison or even possibly been given the death penalty. So this may have been like second degree murder. Cause I mean, if he was given the possibility of parole, obviously, which I don't think you can get in first degree murder. I could be wrong. I don't know. But I mean, Kentucky's a death penalty state. So you'd think someone killing an 8-year-old little girl,
would definitely put you close, except that he's also a minor. So there.
Shit. That's right. So he couldn't be executed. That's right.
He is a minor, and he had no previous record. So they have no reason to think that this wasn't an isolated incident too. And probably because there was no interview, they can't go on first degree unless it is premeditated. So it could have been, second degree, just because there was no pre-planning of forethought
that we know of anyway. But I mean, there's just nothing.
Everything else is speculative. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
This whole damn case is so fucking speculative, because there's just, there's nothing to answer any of these questions other than, okay, we know he was convicted. He went to jail, supposed to be for 40 years. He got out in 24 and some months. And obviously the Jessica's family is not happy about that. And I actually...
There is a way that we could find out all the information.
Want me to go knock on his door? Because I will.
If no, I'm saying like, if only we knew someone that, I don't know, maybe like went to high school with him that could write him a letter in prison and just kind of figure
he's
out what's
going on. He's not in prison, goofball. He's out.
Oh, he's out. Well, then write him a letter in his home.
He's just right over by the airport. Well,
just drive over there.
Leslie, let's just go to his house. Maybe he'll remember you.
Don't go alone.
I will be armed. We'll be good.
I mean, he's going to be armed too. We already know that. Many knives.
I can take him. I've saw pictures of him. I got him. We're good. All right. I think we're at a pretty good spot where we can stop for this episode this week. Tune in next time for when we continue our Gary Gamfer chat with our buddy Leslie here. And if you'd like to get in contact with us, as always, our email is throughtheabysspodcast@gmail.com. We are also on Twitter, Snapchat, and Instagram at abysspodcast1. Well, Ben, we got another episode under our belts. Thanks so much for tuning in to Through the Abyss Podcast. And until next time, keep it weird.
Spooky stuff!